Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. As I said to you before we went to that break, our discussion as we continue to focus on crime and some of the, not just the problems, we're looking at some of the solutions. And that's what this week for the Love of Country is intended at achieving with our discussions, broadening the discussion to not just complaining about what's going on, but trying to figure out what can we do to help yourself, to help your loved ones, to help your community grapple with the crime situation. We know that the authorities are having a tough time, and that's putting it mildly. Joining me now as we continue our discussions, this gentleman has been in the field of security for quite some time. He's been speaking to people about things that they can and cannot do, some of the things that they should be doing. Let's welcome to our program security consultant, Darren Carmichael. Good morning to you.
Good morning, and thank you, Satish, for having me here.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. Our discussions have been pretty intense. They've been focused. They've been productive.
Yeah.
And you come in now to discuss something that I believe at this point in time is valuable to everyone.
Yeah.
Because we cannot tell who the next victim is going to be or where the next crime is going to be committed. But before we get into that, let me allow you to familiarize the listener with yourself. Tell me a bit about yourself, some of what you've been involved in.
Well, my history really goes back a little over 24 years now. And one of them is being one of the founding directors of Crime Stoppers, 800 Tips. In addition to which, I'm also for pretty much the same period under the auspices of the Trinidad and Tobago Chamber of Commerce, the Crime and Justice Committee. We run the flagship program known as Neighborhood Crime Watch. All right, so that involves going into communities all over the country, Trinidad and Tobago, and helping and assisting them set up and establish active, vibrant neighborhood watch groups. This program is about the love of country. And what we've seen over the last 24 plus years is the communities genuinely coming together. Going back to the days of neighbor loving neighbor taking care and looking after each other. And really that has been one of the staples in this country for that period of time, really building that kind of resilience for communities to come together. And wherever neighborhood watch groups have been set up and established and are working, crime generally goes down. It's a natural follow suit, right? Simply because you have all these eyes and ears looking after each other, and of course reporting when necessary into law enforcement. All right, so that's really the how it works.
Well, I assume that now more than ever, this is about survival.
Yeah.
And communities have identified to themselves that, listen, there is strength in numbers.
Yeah.
And when you have these initiatives, we've seen some of the positives. Tell us about some of the communities that you've gone into, some of the positives and some of the challenges that you've had as well.
We literally go into every community. Any community that asks us, of course, I mean, I wouldn't sit here and say that we are invited into some of the more dangerous type communities simply because people feel comfortable meeting, whether it's at a home or at a venue close by in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore they do this freely and wherever they feel that they wouldn't be victimized or targeted. So of course there are some areas that, you know, we are not invited into simply because of probably the risk that some persons see. However, we do meet online, and thank God for COVID, because since COVID came about, there has been an increase in the number of online type meetings. And those online meetings really facilitate us going into neighborhoods that we wouldn't normally want to visibly be seen congregating and speaking about preventing crime. All right, so we go into literally every community. It's successful in the sense that, you know, a lot of communities, I mean, I would have been on average probably about 10 or 12 meetings a month for the last 23 years.
That's a lot.
And since January, I mean, I've been tracking, and we've been doing somewhere close to 25 meetings. In fact, last month, I think it's only the two holidays I didn't meet.
That's almost every day.
Yeah, almost every evening. And in some cases, we have two meetings. So where a church wants to meet and the congregation needs the message, we meet in the church. where a school wants to have a program for instance, the teachers and so on, we do that in the school, and then sometimes a meeting in the evening as well. Most times, we attend the police tongue meetings, where we would have a 15-minute period or so to speak about Neighborhood Watch and share and guide the meeting. And then probably, you know, one starts at 5, some meeting starts at 7 or 8. So you're able to do at least 2 meetings sometimes in a day. So, and that's apart from my 8-to-4 job as a security consultant.
So how does it work? Neighborhood Watch, it should be self-explanatory,
yeah,
but what is it? Do you have, like, people standing guard a certain hour at night, or people set up their little checks and balances? You can't come in here. Who are you? What are you doing in this community? How does it work?
That sounds like what it should be.
Right.
But in reality, Neighborhood Watch is really, you know, in the simplest form, it is neighbors, and I will tell you why they call me. You know, I'm being called, and the increase came in January, probably because the fear of crime is now seem to be grappling some of the communities, all right? So you find that everybody wants to have something set up. Everybody wants to make that difference now. But what really Neighborhood Watch, there's a hybrid of activity simply because I'm a security consultant. If I were not a security consultant, it might have been a little bit different. But in our meetings, we teach you the basics of what Neighborhood Watch is. In other words, the tenants are come together, make a listing, identify who the members are. WhatsApp has made it very useful as a communication tool now. Before, hitherto WhatsApp, it was call by their landline, and you call
message.
Two people,
yeah.
I call two, you call two, and probably after 15 minutes, we may get through, you know, contacting everyone. But now with WhatsApp, it's instantaneous. We get messages instantaneous, we get photographs, video clips, we get the suspicious persons and vehicles immediately. All right, so basically, we come together, establish the groundwork in terms of who's on board and how we communicate with persons, and then we, because of the security focus, we add in security awareness training, situational awareness training. So you're actually being trained in terms of looking at your home, doors, locks, windows, lighting. All of these things come into the 1.5 or 2 hour program. We also would do some self-defense or self-protection training within that period of time, particularly when you look at the demographic of persons and so on. So we make a point whether you're 9 or 99, you know, you should learn how to protect yourself in the event that something were to happen. All right, so they get all of that as well. And an interesting and most important component of all of that is the community's relationship with the police. Right, so we foster that relationship with the police because, after all, Neighborhood Watch groups are, in fact, the eyes and ears of law enforcement. Police can't be everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do everything for everyone. So they can't patrol every location. They can't set up police posts in every district. So what we do is we allow the community to be the eyes and ears. They know their neighbors best. They know who belongs and who doesn't belong. Right? So identifying the persons or the things that are out of character, out of sequence, unusual, is what they do best. All right? So they take that, what I would call natural intelligence, human intelligence, all right? And they bring that to bear within these groups such that they're able to identify vehicles, take photographs from a safe distance, put it in the chat. And you know, an interesting component is that more and more police officers, community policing or community-oriented policing officers, want to be part of the Neighborhood Watch chat groups. The station commanders, the inspector sergeants in the divisions, they want to be part of the Neighborhood Watch group. Why? Because they recognize that they're into law enforcement, they're into crime prevention, and the platform, which is WhatsApp, presents a perfect ground for them to get that intelligence ahead of time. For them to get these suspicious vehicles, validate. They will check the vehicle numbers and the descriptions that are posted, and they will validate whether the number plate and the description matches. And they'll come back into the chat and say, listen, this doesn't match. Pull your children inside, lock your doors. You could be dealing with a suspicious vehicle and so on. So that's the kind of real-time intelligence, real-time information sharing that takes place on the platform, which in my mind makes it the perfect tool for any law enforcement agency to work with.
I understand the advancements of technology and how much simpler it makes the process. We saw in Aranjuez,
when
we had this very, very public home invasion, that the police were able to get there quickly simply because there was a police officer who was involved.
That's correct.
In the community. He lived in the community. He was
part of the group.
And from the discussions that I've had with persons who are involved in community groupings, they say the same thing.
Yeah.
There is always a police officer who is either in the community or has an interest in the community, be it that they're in the station or it's in their district or whatever else. And what I think is one of the strengths is that to have a targeted approach to the crimes. Rather than patrolling and looking for a needle in a haystack, you can now intensify your efforts based on, well, look, we see this happening here and that kind of thing. What concerns me, though, and I've been speaking about it for a while in the program, is that I do not think that we've cracked down on stolen vehicles in the way that we should.
Yeah.
Because criminals do use their own car. That's a fact. I would say that almost every vehicle that is used in committing a crime is either a stolen vehicle or a vehicle that is not carrying the number plate that it's supposed to.
That's correct.
And if police officers, if the police service and law enforcement were to crack down on stolen vehicles, trickle down effect, they would stymie criminals and prevent them from being able to carry out their nefarious activities. We need to take a couple of quick messages. When we get back, of course, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who'd like to be a part of the program, feel free to call us on 623-5227. That's 623-5227. That is the number that you need to use this morning to get onto the show. And we'll be continuing our discussion with the security consultant, Darren Kaimarkel. Some information, some advice for persons who may be interested in setting up their own community watch or may have issues. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Medical Associates Hospital is the only internationally accredited tertiary healthcare institution in the Caribbean for quality in medical care. Medical Associates' gold standard for quality medical treatment, culture of safety for patients and visitors, care based on leading, evidence-based best practices and compliance with international standards make us the leader in private hospital care in the Caribbean. Medical Associates Hospital, number one healthcare for the entire family.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are speaking on day two of this initiative by Freedom 106.5 FM for the love of country with security consultant Darren Kaimarkel. We've been talking a lot since we started on this thing called community watch groups and empowering the community and all those kinds of things. You said you've seen the benefits.
Yeah.
What are some of the measures that communities would employ in seeking to secure their community?
Right. So what are the first things that you do that we try to establish is they need to know their members. They need to know who belongs. You know, Sesame Street had a song a long time ago, and I sing it in the meetings, actually, which is, who are the people in your neighborhood? You know, and they're the people that you meet when you're walking down the street. They're the people that you meet each day. And what we've seen is that where there is high crime in some of the areas, right, and I don't want to call the names here to stigmatize anyone, but we've seen a rise in crime in a lot of different communities, pockets and killings and so on. And the thing is that when crime increases in some areas, the criminal element themselves migrate, right? From where they are at risk to where they feel safer. And by coming into these communities, they rent buildings. Well, they used to go Hyatt and some of the hotels long ago. I think they're personal non grata now, so that has stopped. So they move into some areas temporarily. And you find that if the communities are on the lookout, and they see this activity, this you know, strangers, vehicles, you could kind of tell when you know your people and so on, who doesn't belong and who belongs, kind of thing. And then, of course, the kind of activities they may be involved in based on how they assess that. And the police would love to know this information, right? So what we have is a situation, a very proactive situation, where communities ensure that landlords rent to people who are bona fide and who they've checked out and so on. The police sometimes help with this check to make sure that they ensure that these persons don't come into the area. So they fast track some of these, you know, character checks and so on for the community. So that's one aspect of it. They rationalize in terms of, okay, well, we know the vehicles that we drive, and we kind of know who is coming to us and who is not coming to us and so on. So what they do is they simply say any vehicle that doesn't belong, meaning if a vehicle parks up and idles here for 5 minutes, 2 minutes, nobody's moving, then they put that into the chat. And the idea is we are validating the presence of this vehicle. So it's basically anybody knows this vehicle, did it come to anyone? Somebody may say, yeah, that's my plumber, he's kind of early, he's waiting on me. So we all relax. But if it's not, and they haven't come to you, they haven't come to you, they haven't come to you, then who they come to, right? And those are the kind of early warnings that come into the chat. The police pick up on it, and like you rightfully said, they don't walk or take taxi, they drive. And invariably, the vehicle that they drive is either the stolen, license plate is different or so, or sometimes they actually wait around the corner and then walk to the scene so that the vehicle isn't spotted. The nice thing with that wait around the corner is that once you're in a community, there's no corner. Everywhere is covered, right, with eyes and ears. So they pick it up around the corner, and then they ask the question there as well, right? In some instances, there's an air horn drill and air horn procedures and so on. So once you identify a vehicle or person is suspicious and doesn't belong, or maybe engaging in activity that is suspicious, peeping over fences, going into vehicles, doing whatever it might be that really raises a red flag, then they trigger the alarm instantaneously. They don't wait because they've validated that the vehicle doesn't belong. They identified some kind of suspicious activity, and therefore they raise the alarm immediately. And that has been working everywhere that air horns have been, the emergency air horns have been activated. That kind of panic takes place. So the vehicle, the two men that are walking to the target, and the vehicle that is supposedly in the clear, all of a sudden realizes with the air horns and the dogs barking and the lights coming on and so on, that he is not safe anymore, right? And one thing we know about criminals, they don't want to get caught. They don't want to go back in prison. They engage targets that are soft, what you call soft targets. The chance of being caught is low to minimal, and the chances of escape is very high. And where the air horns draw focus and put the spotlight on them, that automatically changes the game for them. And in every instance, wherever the air horns are blown and persons are awake and looking out and so on, the criminals hightail.
Yeah.
Right? And that is really what they want. We don't, as a community, a neighborhood watch group, the idea is not to engage. We don't pick up baseball bats and ride for anybody, right? As a partner in law enforcement, that's the job of the police. But the community comes together, and from the safety of their homes, they are able to activate a very positive response, right? That has worked for them and has worked for the program time and time again. And this is what we advocate in all instances. Neighborhood Watch, I mean, in my view, works 100% of the time.
We will get into some more nitty-gritty elements of the Neighborhood Watch. And we are speaking, for those of you who are now joining us, with security consultant Darren Carmichael, speaking about so many things related to how you protect yourself, your community, your property, your loved ones. And many times when we have these discussions on crime, we speak to the experts. We speak to the persons who are trained in how to deal with these things, the people who can give us the advice. It's very seldom that we hear from the victims, persons who've gone through, have experienced what it is for their security to be shattered, and for criminals to wreak havoc on them and their loved ones. Joining us now is a gentleman who was the victim of a home invasion. And for the obvious reason, we're not going to identify the individual by name. But let's welcome this person to our program this morning to hear from them. Good morning to you. I'm not too sure if we're having some technical difficulties with the call. Let's try this again. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good day.
Okay, hi, good morning, and welcome to our program.
Hello. Hello, good day.
Okay, it's nice to have you with us here this morning. We'd like you to tell us about your incident and your experience. Tell us what transpired.
Hello?
Okay, I'm not too sure if the caller is hearing the audio clearly, but I'd like you to recount for us your experience and tell us what transpired.
Hello, good day.
Okay, well, we have some technical issues that we need to sort out with the call. He's obviously not hearing us, and he can't communicate with us. We'll get back to that in just a bit. You've been telling us about how this community watch has been working. How great of an impact do you think it has had on crime fighting from that perspective?
Well, it has, because, persons who would have, without the program, I think a lot of communities recognize that, listen, we are vulnerable. You know, some of them feel that patrols will help, some feel that the greater presence of police in the area would help, and so on. And we all know that the police, try as they might, the resources may not always allow for the element of patrol and so on. So, you know, they're targeting areas that are higher crime and so on. And therefore, there is always going to be that group or that body or that area that feels left out, that the patrols aren't there. And wherever the patrols are not visible, or wherever people feel vulnerable, the criminal elements exploit, all right? They pretty much target those vulnerable ones. So what we do in Neighborhood Watch is really a couple of things that we do. One is we help build resilience. And you're asking me if it works, but I'll throw it back, because in my view, as a security person, you can't quantify a negative, right? And what do I mean by that? You may be doing things a particular way. Let's assume you leave here, you go to the car park, you get your vehicle, you drive home. When you get home, you do certain things in a particular kind of way. You may make an extra block before you get in home, and just to make sure you're not being followed and so on. All of those things that you do, from your level of observance to the car park, looking around while you're there, buckling, you know, thing and moving quickly, not being on your cell phone and being distracted. All of these things, in a nutshell, add up to safety.
Okay, let me stick a pin there, because I think we have the caller back online. Hello, good morning.
Yes, have a good day.
Hi, nice to have you with us here this morning. And we'd like you to share with us, with our listeners and those viewing as well, your experience. Tell us about your incident.
Oh, well, on that particular day when the incident happened, was in the night, was about 8:30. I was on an online meeting with some colleagues, and the meeting was now about to end, and I now put on my mic to say, well, good night and whatever, because just prior to that, I was telling myself, when this meeting finishes, I'll get up and close the door and lock up, right? And these guys, they came around the side of the house, and they came in through the front of the front door was open, right? So this is about 8:30 we're talking about here. They came in, one of them had a gun. They came in and they told me to lie down. Somebody asked who else was in the house. My wife was with me at the time, and she was inside in the bedroom, and I was out in the living room. One of them proceeded to tie me up, and they started looking around. They went inside the time, my wife. They asked, asking for keys and whatever else. They took keys for the house, keys for my wife's vehicle. They took my wife's vehicle and went to it eventually. They took jewelry, laptops, phones. So, and I mean, that's basically the ordeal that happened. You know, and I couldn't, within 10, 15, 20 minutes, they were there.
Did you ever think you and your family would be victims of a home invasion?
No, not at all. I mean, it's not something that you would think about or would cross your mind. I mean, you see people who would have had that experience, and you know, you always think to yourself, you would not like that to happen to you, but it's a different thing when you're actually faced with the situation, and you know, you actually go through that ordeal.
What was going through your mind when the incident was unfolding?
Well, at the point in time, I was just trying not to do anything that would cause me to be injured, or let me say for worst case scenario, to be killed, either me or my wife. So I just told them, you know, well, whatever it is all they want, take whatever it is all they want.
Is your community considered a high-risk community? Do you have many incidents and crimes in your community?
Well, I guess I did not think so, but only when after my incident, and, you know, you're speaking to people, and then you hear of the many incidents around the area. And I think even that same night, when the police came afterwards, you know, they were asking questions about a particular street in the area, and because somebody else had an OD that same night. And then when you speak to people, you realize that there were a lot of people in the area who would have experienced something similar, whether it be their car stolen or their house broken into and that kind of thing. And then speaking to the police said that now in my area hot. Right, so that was not something that I guess heard before until that night when I went to that OD.
Since the incident that you and your family experienced and others in the community, has the community taken any action?
Yes, they have. After my incident, and there was the street on the other side of me, which was to be a couple of away from me, they had a meeting, you know, where they tried to institute a neighborhood watch and that kind of thing. And even the street before mine, well, depending on the direction they're going, they would have had a meeting probably the same week, right? And the one on the other street, they had their meeting, I think, a couple of weeks ago, right? One of the things that we in my street, we had gotten these air horns, right? We were encouraged to get them, and, you know, so we had a supply, and somebody came and they brought it, but we never got around to actually doing any kind of drill to really put things in place. So one of the things that I did when I broke out of what they tied me up with when they were leaving, I ran and I got the air horn and I came to the door and I started to make an alarm. Right, but we never had any trail prior to that. So I think now, since the ordeal, things starting to be put in place at a faster rate.
Since an ordeal like this is traumatic in its own right. The sanctity of your home, your personal space is invaded. And unless you go through it, which is not something we want to wish on anyone, many people may not understand how that affects you psychologically.
Since
that event to now, what has changed? Do you do things differently?
Yeah, I mean, I used to always think of myself as an observant, aware person, but since that ordeal, I think that has heightened some more in terms of me and even my wife in the way that we do things. You know, it heightens the awareness in a lot of things. I mean, just simply coming home, right? Turn off the street or the road from the highway, and I find a car following me too much, I take a block. And I try to keep coming down in my area. I'm making a block to make sure that, you know, every minute you know, now you keep looking out. Now the door's locked. As you step inside doors and everything locked, you're looking around to see people who in your neighborhood kind of thing who you're familiar with, places that you're not too familiar with. We have something that we had from before, but we now kind of bring it back on street. We had, like, everybody on our street has each other's number. So we have a card with numbers from the different houses on the street. And I mean, even being on the outside and you've been to think you wouldn't be moving around if you're in a public place. On your phone, if you come out, so let me see a business place where you come out, there'll be power and they go towards the car. You're kind of a little more aware. So I guess it's kind of heightens your sense of awareness and to be a little more observant of your surroundings and people in the surroundings.
Yeah. And finally, as we wrap up our interview with you this morning, what about the investigation? Has there been any progress, any success in identifying the culprits or bringing them to justice?
No, I would say no, because the stuff that was stolen, we didn't get it back. We even tracked my phone and my laptop the same night, and my phone was somewhere up in off Lady Young Avenue in Mopa, and my laptop somewhere up in Brazil. and the information was given to the police the next day, and we haven't heard anything from them since.
Okay. Nicole, I want to thank you for sharing your views, the experience with us, and some of what has happened since then, because hopefully that there's a lesson in there, in your experience, that somebody could pick up on and probably put something in place to prevent them from being a victim as well. So I want to thank you for being with us here this morning.
No problem.
And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, you heard the testimony. Someone who was actually a victim of a home invasion. He said something at the end that has to be troubling to all of us. The fact that the information on the device and its location was passed on to the authorities and nothing has come of it. Those reports are indictments against the police service, because we have very public cases where the police were able to identify devices and go get them. And I guess the police service will have to answer as to why that was not the case this time around, especially when the information was given to them of where the thing is located. And with technology being what it is, it's not impossible to find these devices. We continue our discussions, and of course, you can join us via phone on 623-5227. A couple of messages, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Just a couple of minutes again before the top of the hour. We have news at 8. We continue our discussion probably until 8:15 with our security consultant, Darren Carmichael, because I want to get into a bit more of how the community watch groups should be set up, how they should work, and I want persons to fully understand the benefits, because we are at a stage in the country where we have to take a greater level of personal responsibility.
Yes.
As unfortunate as it might seem, but that's where we are.
And
we do have another guest that will join us at 8:15 as well as we continue our discussion. But when we get back after the news, I want us to fully explain. We've done it before.
Yeah,
for persons who may have missed, because the caller who gave us the testimonial spoke about what should have been in place, and it just simply wasn't. We often do not consider that we can be a victim of crime,
of course,
simply because it may not have hit us, it may not have affected somebody that we know, we may not have been exposed to it, and much of our activities sometimes do not factor in that extra level of awareness in your everyday activities. Because I've spoken about it before. One of the things that we see more and more now, persons being robbed when they go to ATMs.
Yeah.
That almost happened to me right in Port of Spain. I tell people I'm paranoid, but there are people who say, well, it's not that you're paranoid, just overly observant. But I was able to see two individuals make their way to the ATM just before me, and I could tell that they didn't go there to do anything.
Right.
And I left. Prevented probably from being a victim, but we've seen so many of those
cases.
That's
why I said you can't quantify a negative.
No, you can't.
The actions that you take may have averted a problem, and you wouldn't know because you didn't allow it to take place. So that is us removing the opportunity from the equation, and that's critical in terms of what Neighborhood Watch and that kind of crime prevention strategy is about. It's about crime prevention. We could identify almost everywhere the criminal will come at us. Right? What we're doing is we're sharing that information with the public, so that they can now have it to be more proactive and more effective in terms of how they
go. We need to head to the news, but just after that, I'll keep you for a couple minutes again for us to explain once again how to get involved in community watch groups, how to set them up, and what the do's and don'ts. News is next. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, we do have with us still security consultant Darren Carmichael, but we're wrapping up now. You've given us a lot of information. And you've told us about where you've been, some of what you've been involved in, how it has worked. There are communities across the country who need this advice.
Yes.
They need this guidance. They probably need to put some of these measures in place. So how does one go about starting that process?
Well, first and foremost, the will has to be there that you want to get to the stage to do something with your community and among your community. Normally, somebody would contact myself, either on my number, and I'll give it now, it's 312-2281, or they contact us through the Crime Stoppers website, which is crimestopperstt.com. There's a page there dedicated to Neighborhood Watch, or you can also contact us through the secretariat at the Trinidad and Tobago Chamber of Commerce. All right? Whichever way, I will get the information, and we will make contact and do whatever we need to do to fast-track us having a meeting. So I would give them guidance in terms of how to structure, how to publicize the meeting, whether it's an online meeting or in-person meeting, where it is best held and so on. At the meeting time, which is normally about, most of the time on a weekday, it's between 6:30 to 8:30, 2 hours. On a weekend, we start at 5 p.m., right? And anywhere in between, all right? And once we get to the point of having that meeting, they will learn about what is Neighborhood Watch, how to set it up, what's the best way to build out the network. We talk about street captains. We talk about the WhatsApp chat. Mm. And of course, you don't want to chat where people send in flowers on a Monday morning and memes and so on. So it has to be an emergency chat group. I will normally get the police to be on the chat, plus myself will be on every chat. We become the first responders in terms of helping, assisting, guiding. So there's a kind of hole in your hand throughout the process. That's the chat, and we speak about setting up the use of the air horns. There's a drill and procedures in terms of how to do it. The gentleman who had the home invasion spoke about having the horn, but not having a drill.
Right.
It's important to know that each person with an air horn acts as a repeater in the community to help broadcast the air horn, raise an alarm. You know, dogs start to bark, you trigger your car alarms, your home alarms, your sirens, whatever you have after that. So it initiates a sort of a process in there that is a very proactive process. Then we also would speak to how can you make yourself less of a target, right? And that speaks to your own person in terms of situational awareness. We tell you everything from how to conduct, whether you're driving, walking, running, where they have a business, how to, you know, how to operate with your business and so on, if you're going to the ATM, if you're going to the supermarket, a whole host of things that are commonplace. And this is really taken from historical data. You know, being in all of these groups, I'm in thousands of Neighborhood Watch groups, I'm on about 900 plus chat groups, all right? And we see all the instances, we have a fair idea of how it happens. I mean, it's a pity we can't introduce AI into this and kind of like tally and predict what is gonna happen next. I mean, that's probably the next stage of Neighborhood Watch. But certainly, we want to be able to share that information with people in real time, because he did say that he left his door open, and he did say that he didn't have certain things in place and so on. So the Neighborhood Watch meeting tells you about all the do's and don'ts, what you can do to make yourself less of a target. We know how the criminal is going to come. We pretty much train you how to anticipate and how to deflect whatever risk or threats may exist. We also do it from the neighborhood level. So there are some areas that need lighting, some areas that need fencing, some areas that need the bush need to be cut and the vacant lots need to be trimmed and so on. We teach you all of those things. We bring into focus something called CPTED, Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design, CPTED. It basically speaks about using the built environment and how surveillance plays an important role within there, because everyone in the community is the eyes and ears of law enforcement. They do their own surveillance and so on, right? So the program, and albeit 2 hours, it sort of whet the appetite with all of these things, where each and every person now sees their role in the whole matrix of that Neighborhood Watch, all right? So first and foremost, fix yourself, fix your home, build resilience. Then we look at the wider community in terms of the things we can do, right? This also speaks to neighborhood gatherings and meeting people and breaking bread and enjoying each other's company and socializing. God has a critical role in terms of meet and greets and so on. So you get to know who and learn these persons' weaknesses and strengths and so on. All of those things combined build that kind of resilience, right? That removes the opportunity from the equation. And without the opportunity, technically there's no crime.
Yeah. I want to thank you for being with us here this morning, and I do hope that persons listening in to us, if they've not found themselves in community watch groups or they need further guidance with their community watch groups or setting them up, that they get in touch with you and take that step, because that might mean the difference between somebody being a victim and preventing a crime from taking place. Yeah. Thank you so much.
My pleasure for being here.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We continue our discussions, all part of day two of For the Love of Country, this initiative by Freedom 106.5 FM, engaging in discussions on crime, criminality, some of these suggestions, some of the things that people should be doing to better protect themselves and their loved ones. And joining us now via Zoom, a gentleman, he's been with us on numerous programs before. He was on yesterday. He joins us again today. That's Sergeant J.C. Small. Good morning to you, Sergeant Small, and welcome to our discussion this morning.
Pleasant morning.
Thank you. Nice to have you with us here this morning. Very robust. We've been discussing this morning two topics, murder and home invasion. For those persons who may not be familiar with you, give us a bit of your background and tell us some of what you're involved in.
Well, I've been in the civil services for this country. I spent most of my years in the Eastern Division Task Force, repeat offenders program task force. Out of my 20 years in this, I'm 12 years, we're doing more operational I've been in the rural economy commission section in 2016, where I was posted in the Central Police Division, and we were engaged in a number of crime prevention and activities in the Central Division that led somewhere in 2019 to the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service, winning for the first time the IDB President's Award for Service Excellence in the Public Sector. And that was based on a collaborative approach, considering aspects of policing, investigative, operational, intelligence, and well, of course, community policing, where I'm the person in charge, the second division officer in charge in the Central Division. I'm also an alumni with the United States Embassy, where I participated in 2018 in the IVLP program, the International Visitors Leadership Program, which was a program that focused on gangs, countering gangs, and violent extremism.
That's a lot of information. It definitely places you in a position to speak to us pointedly about what we're discussing here this morning. And a large portion of our discussion this morning has been on the issue of home invasion. Now, the term home invasion, we could argue about what that really connotates, but people have a general idea when you say home invasion, what it means. We've been seeing these stories in the daily newspapers, on social media. We've been hearing the reports. What's the situation in the Central Division? You've been involved, you say, closely with community policing. Home invasions and communities becoming aware. Are communities more aware? Are communities taking action to try to prevent home invasions or deter criminals? What's happening?
Well, in the Central Division, under the current leadership of Senior Superintendent Gavin Simon, not only myself from the Community Police Department, but the station commanders in each station, we have monthly meetings called the Station Council Meeting, which occurs once a month. This is shared by the police inspector or sergeant who is in charge of a particular station. And we meet with residents on a monthly basis to, you know, speak of the crime concerns in the community and how, and general other concerns, and how the police can work with them to, you know, reduce the likeliness of these crimes occurring. So what we do in these meetings is really empower people. We keep our town meetings, we keep community meetings, neighborhood watch group meetings, and all these meetings are geared towards identifying the root causes to crime, and then, you know, obviously equipping our residents within the Central Division in terms of how they could protect themselves. I mean, I work closely with our previous guest speaker, Mr. Darren Carmichael. We meet up in almost every meeting, every public meeting that we keep in terms of neighborhood watch group. We always present and work together. So I'm quite familiar with what Crime Stoppers is doing. I must say kudos to them. But we from the Central Division, in terms of the officers, we educate people in terms of how they can make themselves safe. And I know Mr. Carmichael had touched on a concept called SEPTED, as he said, stated crime prevention through environmental design. And when I think of crime, I want persons to get a picture of something we call the crime triangle. And in the crime triangle, you have the opportunity for the crime to take place, the victim of the crime, and the offender. And without any of these elements being present, we believe that crime would not take place. So in terms of the opportunity, when you consider the environmental opportunity, that is where SEPTED come in. Normally, if a place desolated and isolated and lonely and dark, that is just like the perfect environment for some criminal activity to take place, somebody to snatch you or snatch something from you, because you know criminals always looking for the opportunity. So we believe through SEPTED, once we remove the environmental opportunity in terms of ensuring that your home is probably properly well lit, if even the recreational facilities and communities well lit, you have proper working street lights, it means that with that bright, you know, presence of light, we believe it, you know, in terms of the environmental opportunity, removing the likeliness for a crime to occur. When you think about the victim, we believe in target hardening of the victim in terms of making itself less of a target by being generally aware of your surroundings. And you know, I must, you know, big up to my colleague, I know you're here from him later this week, Officer Adrian Seeley. He always speak about situational awareness. And you know, they have a color code in terms of the heightened sense of alertness, the real minimal sense of alertness, and black meaning you're no longer here because you would have been eliminated because of a threat that probably been in the environment. So things like even walking through the streets and being aware of the surroundings, being aware in terms of, I know lately a lot of persons been like going to extract a large amount of cash on the bank, and they just take out this large amount of cash and they just not aware. And you know, when you interview them sometime after, you kind of recollect and they were like, you know, I observed this person looking at me strangely in the bank. And then when I came on the bank, I see these two, three men, and these were the same men that followed me and robbed me. So, you know, it really is important for you to be critically aware of your environment in terms of looking at people's proper physical description, distinguishing marks in terms of their body, if they're driving a vehicle, know the proper vehicle registration number. It's just important to be really alert in terms of environment. Not walking around with headphones in the ears or earplugs, where you're just not aware of your external environment. But it's your keen senses, like seeing and hearing especially, it's so important for us to pay attention to these senses. And sometimes, you know, we say in layman's term, we get vibes or our gut feeling tell us something. Most times you must follow your gut feeling or your vibes as you just call it, because, you know, it's just, you know, that awareness, that sense of awareness in terms of you as a person, you know, seeing, sensing some form of danger in the environment, you know?
But crime is not something new. This didn't just crop up overnight or last weekend or anything else. We've been grappling with it for quite some time. And the discussions on crime have been vociferous. People have been vocal. You've been hearing them all over the place. How aware would you say communities are when it comes to taking actions that could prevent them from becoming a victim?
I think communities could, and there's definitely the need to strengthen up our vigilance in terms of community. And I ain't talking about village vigilance in terms of taking a baseball bat and wanting to come and combat somebody or confront somebody face to face. But I'm talking about in terms of your home. Some people have, I mean, touching right back, intercepted. Your walls very high. If the police are patrol, you're unable to see what's taking place in the yard. The trees overgrown. It creates the opportunity for people to hide and that kind of thing. So we're still in the process of educating the public. And, you know, I employ all law enforcement persons, all communities in terms of persons with the awareness, with the knowledge to basically be a brother's keeper, be a neighbor's keeper, look out for each other. Sometimes people leave their homes during the day. When they return sometime in the night, the place pitch black. They don't know what happened. Sometimes they return in home, they're not aware of somebody following them. And in most cases, when you see these crimes happen, the person, it happens so sudden that persons was, you know, on alert or unaware of their surroundings. So I am seeing a need where we need to continue strengthening communities. And through programs like this that you're hosting here right now, you know, is a good means of educating the public and sharing the information to make themselves less of a target in scenarios where, you know, criminals, looking. It's so important for us to, continue raising these types of awareness and having more neighborhood watch group meetings and basically empowering communities.
Yesterday, we had some discussions that focused as well on this issue of empowering communities and on the individual becoming more aware. And the position was put forward that has to be in tandem with the police officers and the police service. cracking down on criminals carrying out nefarious activities. And the position was put forward that we are asking people, we are asking citizens to now do plenty much more than they would have been doing. And the reason why they have to be doing so much more is because the crime situation is not being arrested. In tandem with all of these community meetings, these community initiatives, what's being done on the side of law enforcement to strengthen or to intensify or to increase the action to apprehend criminals?
I mean, Trinidad and Tobago Police Service as an organization, through our strategic plan, our first strategic pillar, we have five strategic pillars under the headings community partnership, public safety, operational excellence, information and communication technology, and occupational health and wellness. And our first pillar, community partnership, even our vision speaks to making every place in Trinidad and Tobago safe, and our mission speaks to partnering to the citizens of Trinidad and Tobago. So as an organization, we have employed many different policing strategies, including an intelligence-led policing approach in terms of we look at international best practice in terms of what research has shown. We also have our crime and problem analysis branch, CAPA, in terms of they look at the crime trends and realities to look at where we need to deploy our policing resources. You also have a patrol initiative taking place currently in the police service called the active directive patrol under our new patrol policy. And you know, these approaches help us to focus our attention in terms of where we have the most crime challenges. So in areas like built-up communities, we have our criminal investigation department patrolling the station itself, the officers patrolling, our task force officers patrolling, officers of community police. I mean, day-to-day, we do school visits, lectures and targeted intervention in the schools, and even en route to the schools, en route to the station, en route to different business places, we pay particular attention to engage the business community to share safety tips. So in terms of our organization, we ensure that our police presence and response is there to support members of the public. But you know, safety, when you think about the word safety, that feeling of being free from harm, safety is everybody's responsibility. So it's not a matter, is the police need to do this, and if them was doing this, we would not be in this situation. The truth is, you know, it's so many different contributing factors to crime, and the police are arresting hundreds of people every day, thousands of people every day for firearm offenses. But I mean, in terms of the laws of Trinidad and Tobago and the constitution, right, they entitled to bail. So sometimes we arrest persons today for a firearm, and before you know it, and they're entitled to it based on the laws, they're out on bail. You know, we have a lot of repeat offenders. Recidivism is high. So it's so many different, you know, aspects to look at. And it's like every entity needs to play their role. And that's why collaboration is the key. But I believe we as an organization, in terms of the officers being vigilant, patrolling, we are out there, we are having the big seizures, you know, for far too long. Persons in Trinidad and Tobago saying, what about the big fish? We have proven as an organization, we continue to go after the big fish. We collaborate with entities like customs. We have our riverine patrol. We work closely with the Coast Guard. And, you know, the police is really, police officers are really doing their part. When you look at day-to-day operations in the police service under the leadership of our current commissioner of police and our executive, we are reading drug blocks. We are targeting criminal offenders, known drug and gang offenders. And we are strengthening up our resources in terms of, right now we are engaged in the GRACE program, the gang reduction and community empowerment program. And the approach in this program, you know, is a three-part approach where we focus on intervention, suppression, and prevention. Intervention, suppression, and prevention. And you know, when you think about these three broad categories, you know, every aspect of policing, including problem-oriented policing, community policing, evidence-based policing, be as an organization employing all our policing strategies to ensure that we do our part to apprehend criminal elements. And then, you know, through our police youth club movement that started in 1974, you understand the importance and the value of working with young people. You know, our police youth club is focused on, in terms of environmental opportunities for young person, educational opportunities, you know, focus on the arts and culture, and just show them the alternatives as opposed to choosing a life of crime and violence. teach them the importance of agriculture.
Okay, Sergeant Small, I hear you. And yesterday we had the same discussion, and I posed the same question to the guest that I'll pose to you. Do you think the public is of the opinion that these initiatives are working? Because, and I'll tell you why I'm asking that question. We are on the path to yet another record murder figure. And as unfortunate as it may seem, that's how we gauge the crime situation and crime fighting murders. Yesterday we were told that the statistics, if you take murders out of the equation, the statistics are good. But I'm not too sure if the public shares that opinion. Does the public feel safer? And that's the question that I think the police service needs to answer. Because it's all well and good for you and other members of the police service to come and say that you have all these initiatives and all of these programs and all of these projects and Grace and Gang and everything else. But I believe that there's a disconnect. And the disconnect is between what you are saying is being achieved and the public getting that information and feeling safer. Am I being unfair? Is the question unfair, or is there really that disconnect? Are these things taking place in a silo where the public is not aware of them? Because people don't seem to feel safer. What's your opinion? What's your take on what I just said to you?
I mean, it's really prompting deeper conversation. And I would say the police service as an organization, when they look at our approaches, it have worked. It have proven to work. And I just want to draw reference to when this 16, 17, in terms of the enterprise community, where sometimes in the central division, for 1 month, we had like 17 murders. And, you know, it was based on what was happening in the enterprise community. Sometimes 1 month in the enterprise, we had like 12, a whole approach in terms of policing. And we would have brought about an 87% reduction by 2019 in the enterprise community where murders, shootings, violence, and gang-related offenses had reduced drastically. So the approaches that the police service using as an organization has proven to work. And when you look at the statistics in terms of that particular enterprise community where we were having the most challenges, and when you look at areas like Lavantil and Beaton where we had the most crime challenges, we have seen over the years a significant reduction to crime in those areas. However, in other communities, you find persons, because, you know, criminal migration is real and criminal elements moving from one place to the other and influencing other people. But the wholes of society need to understand that everyone has a role. Because everybody, it's easy to blame the police, but it's the easiest thing to do. But what about the households where you have persons with large sums of cash, because you have persons breaking from down to the banks and stealing millions of dollars, to the ATM machines, to the criminal elements who having access to large cash and they're buying guns and drugs and, you know, feeding communities and persons, parents, children, grandparents, have a culture where they don't see nothing wrong with that. And then when the police come and arrest them and do their part, everybody have a problem. So everybody have a role in terms of society. So the easiest thing to do to remove the blame from yourself is to blame the police. What about the persons who seen youth selling drugs on the streets and seeing people hiding guns and seeing more youths being involved in crime and doing nothing about it because it doesn't affect their immediate family? You know what? Everybody has tried to be concerned and be, and care and tend to want to show interest in what taking place when it hits home. And we must stop doing that. Stop waiting till crime hits home to understand that you too could do something to deter crime from taking place within your community. There are too many people and households encouraging crime, encouraging criminal behavior. They need to start blaming themselves and look at, you know, how they could report the next crime, how they could report the next youngster that they realize delinquent and shoot and somebody giving them a bag of marijuana to sell. You need to focus on those things.
Well, it's good advice, and we've been hearing it over and over again that there needs to be greater accountability. Sergeant Small, this is where we're going to have to leave it this morning. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Pretty interesting discussion, and I'm sure that we're going to have much more of it as this entire campaign continues on Freedom 106.5 FM. Thank you for being with us here this morning.
Thank you.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Coming on the home stretch of this morning's edition of the Morning Rumble, and of course, day two only just beginning of this campaign by Freedom 106.5 FM for the love of country. And of course, we need to thank the people who are making this possible, our sponsors, Crime Stoppers, Lash Technologies, Agricultural Development Bank, Business Lifeline TT Limited, Super Technologies Limited, Focus Studios, Ginger and the Spice Gourmet, and Extreme CCTV Systems. This morning, we started off our discussion focusing on murder, and of course, the discussion, we moved into the issue of home invasions. Joining us now is someone, he's been on the program numerous times before. He spoke to us recently about some of the problems that they've been having with safety in their community, and that, of course, is Councillor Dudnath Meru. Good morning to you, Councillor. Welcome to our program.
Morning, Satish.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. It's a pretty focused discussion that we're having on communities and some of the issues that communities have been grappling with when it comes to their security. I know that you've highlighted in the past some of the challenges that have cropped up and how you've dealt with some of them. Let's get an update. You spoke to us some time ago about strange persons in the community and how the community dealt with those. What has happened since then?
Well, Satish, there's a deep concern about crime, not only in my area, but through the entire country. South Oropouche, which falls within my electoral district, has had about four murders over the last 2 months or so. Only about 2 weeks ago, a young man was murdered just next to the Oropouche government primary school. And that area, Oropouche and Faizabad, has become a hot spot as well. Once we used to boast that the Southwestern Division of the Police Service was one of the safest places in Trinidad, and crime was at an all-time low, we do not no longer can boast about that, because the entire country is engulfed in this crime situation as we speak, Satish.
But why? What would have factored in the increase in murder? That's a dramatic increase. And you're talking about in quick succession. What's going on?
Well, Satish, you see, I believe that this crime is a network, is a business, and that these fellas are working with gangs, and gangs are spreading their wings, and if they know that there are vulnerable people in certain areas who they can recruit to come into their gangs, they recruit those persons, and then they infiltrate the area where those persons reside, and those persons are the connect for the gangs and their members to come into the area and put down their illegal activities. And that is what is happening. As I see it, Satish, I really, really feel sorry for the police service, because they seem to be losing this fight on crime. They never had it under control. I don't know if they will ever get it under control. And as I always say, Satish, until such time that the government do not find it in their heart to dismantle those gangs and get those weapons, those illegal firearms out of the hands of those fellas, we're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Let me ask you a question. As somebody as involved as you are in community and local government and monitoring what happens on a national scale, we've had discussions yesterday, we've had discussions today, we'll have for the rest of the week. Officials representing the arms of national security, they speak to us over and over again about numerous initiatives, about programs and projects and anti-crime, this and that and the next and the other. Are you of the opinion that they're working?
Satish, nothing that they are doing with respect to crime seems to be working and working positively. We need a robust effort in crime. We need a plan that will drive fear into the hearts of the criminals in this country. And this government needs to look at that approach, whereby the criminals will be fearful for their own lives. But today we live in a society where the citizens are fearful for their own lives in the sanctity and in the privacy of their own home that they consider their castle. People are no longer feeling safe even in their own homes. Satish, I know people at night when they are asleep, if breeze blow hard and something fall off a table, they wake up in fear. And that is how it is.
Oh, you're right. I mean, we've had some stories. I've met people who've been victims of crime, and criminals are really, really creative. There was one case where a gentleman said he heard the tap in the yard running. He opened the door to go outside, and that was all that the criminals were waiting on. And once he opened the burglar proof and the door, and he came outside to turn off the tap, they ran into the house, and well, we all know what happened.
Satish, I was listening something last night too, and apart from the home invasions and the normal crime and murders and so on, I listened to some statistics last night where 700 vehicles have been stolen for the year so far.
Yeah.
You tell me half of the year and 700 vehicles. Satish, there are persons who buy a vehicle, take a loan from the bank, paying for that vehicle. And I see some brand new vehicles that are maybe a month, 2 months on the road, and they're stolen from the owners. And this the police service is like I don't know, like them, like instead of they go forward, they're going backward.
We've spoken to police, and the division that deals with stolen vehicles, I'd spoken to them, and they had said that there are several aspects of this. One is they were stealing them for parts. The other one is that they're stealing them, altering the whatever chassis or whatever number that they need to alter, and they're reselling the vehicles. And the third element is that these vehicles are being used for crimes. And I've said time and time again that if the police service cracks down on stolen vehicles, there will be a trickle-down effect on crime. But I want to take you back to something that you said, Councillor. You said that there needs to be a robust approach in fighting crime. What would a robust approach look like?
Satish, we need to start dismantling those gangs, because those gangs, I remember some time ago they said there was 116. I am sure that probably have almost reached 200. And these gangs are spreading their wings. You know, like you have the constituencies and electoral districts. They're coming into every nook and cranny of this country. Nowhere is safe anymore. And until we do not find a robust effort to dismantle and find it in our hearts to do what is necessary to dismantle these gangs, we are not going anywhere anytime soon. Satish, I was reading yesterday where this young man in Pinal was shot and killed in a home invasion. You know, the government continues to do as though nothing happened. And the loss of life is nothing to them. A young man lost his life. He left his wife and his child. That is of no concern to this government, because they are not showing any sign of taking this robust approach to getting the guns off the streets.
Okay, Councillor, thank you so much. But we need to take some messages at this point in time. I think we all agree that more needs to be done. The challenge is identifying what that means. Hopefully by the end of this week, we should have some clarity on that. Let's take a couple of messages. When we get back, ladies and gentlemen, we're taking some of your calls. And remember, you can get us on 623-5227. The number once more, 623-5227. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, we're taking some of your calls on 623-5227. 623-5227. I know that it's been a bit challenging for the callers, because regularly the calls and the listeners make up a large portion of the content of the show. With the guests, obviously, that has to have a bit of compromise. So we're taking some calls now for those of you who'd like to be a part of the discussion. We've had some pretty interesting discussions already this morning. Let's see if we have somebody with us.
Hello, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Eric.
Mr. Mabia, are you hearing me?
Everybody's hearing you, Eric.
Okay, right, Mr. Mabia, I wanted to find out from you, at the end of this exercise, where shall we be? Because I wish to identify the reason as to why we are here, and give reasons as to how we can get out of where we are.
Well,
but it seems to me that every time I try to make those comments, there is some opposition to it.
Oh, okay, just now wait. You asked me a question, let me answer you.
Yes.
You asked the question as to where we're going with this thing after.
Yeah, where shall
the
we
intention,
be at the end of this
exercise? Eric, is to compile the information that is gathered throughout this week, the suggestions, the proposals, and to formulate it into a document that is going to be handed to your government.
Well, let me say this to you, to our government. We live here. Let me just say this to you. The last guest you had on the program, my good friend Constance Miru, started to blame the executive for everything under the sun.
Uh-huh.
But the hands of the UNC is as white as the fleet of snow.
Mm.
And the question is whether or not they have a part to play in all of this. Because if when you go to the parliament and you say you want a whistleblower legislation, and the member for Oropuchi stands up and tells you, if you know something, tell it to your priest. We don't want any whistleblower legislation yet. if you have a situation where the security personnel in the licensing office are compromised and you do not have a system of testing them like polygraph, how can you get anywhere? The cars will continue to be stolen, number plate put on them, and they'll be on the road. Mm. The whole infrastructure for crime is here, and it is here because of the way in which the UNC has treated with this matter.
But
we have a situation in this country where the largest bank in the country has told casinos, we don't want your accounts, keep them.
Eric, every time we have this discussion, I keep saying to you that I take your point that we need to review what's in place and what needs to be done. I say that to you all the while. I have said to you that I support the issue of polygraphing. I do. I think that should be a requirement that is recurring in the job for those in the protective services, for customs, for the army, even police and everybody else. I agree with that. But this thing about whistleblower legislation, it's tied into another bit of legislation, so it's not a clear-cut thing. And there are concerns. But here's a question. For how we used to solve crime before whistleblower legislation, as I said, there's merit to it, because there are people who would have information one way or the other and would feel safer with whistleblower legislation. It works in other parts of the world. Maybe if there are concerns, let's iron out the concerns and move ahead. We have another call. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Morning, Tatish.
Where are you calling us from?
I listened to the guy from the police force, you know, put out a set of qualifications and courses he's taken, and he didn't answer most of the questions you asked him. He, you know, deflected, and I don't know if he understood the question. The question is, with all these initiatives that the police are in, and the crime is still high, he didn't walk with any statistics to show, well, look, robbery down 25%. He didn't walk with anything to tell you. He just telling you, crime down, this down, that down, we're doing initiatives. The next time when you bring it, when you're talking to a policeman, or you let them bring initiatives. Let them bring statistics. Let the public, and make it public. Let the public see, well, crime, robbery down, car thief down, but, you know, nothing. So I'm impressed in any way by that gentleman. However, Eric, on the other hand, you know, same story for the last, you know, and I bet he'll sing the same story for the next 25 years. UNC, UNC, UNC is the problem. And this government has been in power for 8 years, going on 8 years, and the crime is still high. I think that this police force needs outside help.
Okay, all right, well, thank you. When it comes to statistics, I've asked for them, and some of the guests yesterday, they did present some. I believe that there is a facility for you to find some stats on the TTPS website. As to how thorough those stats, I can't tell you. But I take your point about being more open and forthright with the public. And that can go a long way in probably dealing with some of the concerns that people would have. For those of you wanting to be a part of the discussion, our numbers this morning, 623-5227. Number once again, 623-5227. The Community Watch Initiative has been working in some areas and working very, very well. I know that Phyllis City has launched its own version of a Community Watch. They have a patrol and everything else. And they've had some magnificent results, to the point where they've had some arrests. They've had some firearms seized. I believe some stolen vehicles as well. It's not a silver bullet. It has not prevented crime 100%, but it has done a great deal in reassuring people within the community that, well, something is being done. And a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that as this initiative goes on for the entire week, all programs throughout the day on Freedom 106.5, we will have special interviews, discussions on the issue of crime, the various elements, the various aspects with all the announcers, so that we can delve deeper into this thing and try to get as many views as is possible, and probably some suggestions as well to some of the issues confronting us. Tomorrow evening, we will be partnering with a group, and there's a town hall meeting at the Arima Community Center, I think it is, yes? And it's from 6 o'clock, registration is from 5. I'll be co-hosting the event, and we will be broadcasting the event. It's an opportunity for persons to come and let their voices be heard. Many times we complain, and we say that the authorities aren't doing anything, and there may be merit to that, that more is needed from those people who are charged with actual crime fighting. But letting your voices be heard is an important part. It's an important part of it as well. And I urge each and every one of you to take advantage of that and come out tomorrow evening. Come and make your contribution, make your points, your suggestion, raise the issues that you believe need to be raised. We do have some statistics when it comes to the police service and what's going on compared to from 2022 to 2023. Robberies, according to these statistics put on by the police service, robberies are down dramatically for all of 2022. We had 2,221 robberies reported. As at this point in time, there are 890. Burglaries and breakings are also said to be down. For all of 2022 is 1,562. Year to date, it's 530 that have been reported. When it comes to the larceny of motor vehicles, these statistics are not in tandem with what was released recently, in that we were told that over 700 vehicles have been stolen already. This says 381 for 2023, so this obviously was not updated. Murders, the murder figure as well, and this is not updated because we're well over 260, I think it is. For all of 2022, homicides, we had 600 and I think it was 14. So definitely some statistics that need updating, and we can get those. I'm sure that as we go ahead with this initiative that we have on Freedom 106.5, we will be getting more stats for you. I believe we have somebody else on the line. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Yes, at this morning.
Good morning to you.
How are you going?
I am fine. You
okay, all right. I know the crime, because there's any crime.
Yes.
Right? Well, say, this thing is a complicated thing, you know. You see, let me tell you something. You see white collar crime? As long as white collar crime continues in this country, the other blue collar, other small men, they're a small crime, they're murder. You see what we're not listening to? You listening to me, right? I know if I'm coming through clearly.
Yeah, we're hearing you clearly. Go right ahead.
All right, good. What I'm saying is that this, listen, this thing, sometimes why police wants us to work with them, but we need to work with the police, and crime is everybody business. Yesterday, I was hearing you speaking, and you set up situations where you just try to avoid, like, okay, let me just throw one quick to me. I went to the river time, and we know one set up the cook, but some guys come, and the way they're moving on there, I tell my brother and boy, like, you're there. We start, we know one light the fire. And after this, well, they start actually going and then we say, now, boy, we got to just see corner, we gone, right? Number one. Number two, this crime thing that come, watch me. Picture this. Things coming through the border from other countries, like, I just using Venezuela as an example, right? Think of my border. Things coming in container. Right? The guns, the bandits I have right now, is better automatic weapons. I tell you, watchmen, I have cases that men who say they're not using old gun. So that's more choices that them little old gun to put it aside. Or they give a youth man who younger than them just to like you play, a toy to play with. Because they have real, real modern technology guns. So I tell you personally, this thing is like, you're falling, you're taking a few guns off the street, and like you're falling, the top have a hole, and things just coming back. So watch, we had to be part of it, and we had to, you see them thing with neighborhood, watch everything. We had to get more involved in them kind of thing. The registration, Erica, here is very important. By any personally, this crime thing, I feel we play long with it. But the solution is just everybody had to get involved for himself and try to do what we could do. All right, Brenda, thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call. You're right. And I mean, we've had discussions, you've contributed numerous times in the past, and you've said the very same thing, that there are all elements of crime that need to be considered. White-collar crime definitely is one of those, because white-collar crime deals in millions of dollars sometimes. And it is a factor that we need to pay attention to. Our discussions will continue on Freedom 106.5 for the rest of today and until Friday, and probably spill over into the weekend as well, because we are going to have conversations with numerous individuals. The variety of discussions is impressive. And I can tell you that one of the focal points of all the discussions is trying to find a solution. We may not come up with the solution. We may not come up with all the solutions. We may come up with one. We might suggest a few that would have some sort of validity. But this is where you all come in as well. We are doing our part as a media house to facilitate the discussions. You have to be a part of the discussion. And of course, we need to thank the people who are making these discussions possible for this special campaign for the love of country. It's sponsored by Crime Stoppers, Lash Technologies, the Agricultural Development Bank, Business Lifeline TT Limited, Super Technologies Limited, Focus Studios, Ginger and the Spice Gourmet, and Extreme CCTV Systems. This is where we drop the curtains on this morning's show. Tomorrow we'll be back again. The discussions continue. Govan is up next. And throughout the day, we have all of these very, very interesting focus issues on crime and all associated issues that I urge you to be a part of. As we always say, be safe on the nation's road. You never can tell. The life you save may be just that of your own.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.